Hi, this is Damien O'Doherty. Welcome to Center Maryland's The Conference Call. We've been interviewing national thought leaders about COVID-19 and the response thereto through all of these episodes. And I didn't want to break with that, except what Gigi Sohn is here to talk about today is really a linchpin for all of the access we need in a post-pandemic world or in a pandemic world. We need access to our election ballot. We need access to healthcare resources. None of that can happen in this climate unless people have equity in the space of broadband and people can of all kinds can get access to broadband. So I thought as we talk about telemedicine and telehealth and a lot of other things, it's nice to understand how critical broadband is and access to Wi-Fi is for everyone. So here is Gigi Sohn. She's a distinguished fellow at the Georgetown Law Institute for Technology, Law and Policy, and a Benton Senior Fellow and Public Advocate. She is an alum of the Ford Foundation. And when I talk to her, I'm so often reminded that that while I was a University of Baltimore School of Law graduate, I did pay some of my way through undergraduate school, pulling electric wire through the Georgetown Law Center. So a unique intersection of facts there. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed the talk. Hi, this is Damien O'Doherty from Center Maryland and the conference call. We have Gigi Sohn, who is a distinguished fellow at the Georgetown Law Institute of Technology, Law and Policy, and is a Benton Fellow, Senior Fellow, and Public Advocate. She is on the board of directors of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and the advisory board of the Open Markets Institute. So when people are talking about openness and access to broadband, they are talking to Gigi Sohn. That's why we're here today. Welcome.
It's great to be here.
You have been focused on something for a long time that everybody else is now just beginning to realize is a catastrophic issue. Can you talk a little bit about your experience when it comes to broadband and the law surrounding it?
Yeah, so I've been an advocate for everybody getting access to broadband, as long as broadband's been around, about 20 years. And it's always been a problem to get broadband to all Americans for a variety of reasons. It's number one, it's very, very expensive. Number two, and this is related to the cost, there's not a lot of competition. And number three, in some areas, particularly rural areas, tribal lands, it's so expensive to build the networks that most of the big companies that you've heard of, Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, Charter, they don't want to build there. It's not cost effective. It's not a profit-making enterprise. So even though we've had broadband in this country for about 20 years, we still have tens of millions of Americans who don't have access to broadband, either because the network isn't available or because it's too expensive and they can't afford it.
You know, it's such an interesting issue with elections, with broadband, with healthcare. Access is everything, and I'm wondering what your solutions are, or your positioning is for improving access for all Americans.
Yeah, so you may absolutely make the point that if anything has been realized during this COVID-19 crisis is that, you know, access to broadband is not a side issue. It is the issue. It is the way that we, you know, participate in our economy, in our education system, in our culture, in our civic life. So it's not, like I said, it's not a luxury. It's an absolute necessity. So I think in the first instance, this has got to be something that Congress takes on. The Federal Communications Commission, where I worked in the Obama administration, has some money to help people get online if they can't afford it. They have a program called the Lifeline Program, but it's only $9.25 subsidy a month. So most people that use that subsidy pay for their mobile phone, which is not adequate to get online, particularly if, as in my household, you have multiple people online at the same time using various and sundry devices. So the House just introduced a COVID-19 stimulus bill yesterday that would give all Americans who are low income or who just became low income because they lost their jobs a $50 a month subsidy that they could use to pay for broadband. And I think that's the kind of thinking we have to have right now. Even some of the big companies, T-Mobile, for example, is putting forth a $50 a month, I think actually $100 a month voucher program where you'd get two $50 vouchers, I think, a month, and you could use it to pay for broadband service or voice service or cable service. I don't like the cable idea, but you get the idea. Is we can't be talking about $9.25 broadband subsidy, which is very hard to get for a variety of reasons that are too complicated to talk about now. But a simple voucher or a simple subsidy program where you get $50 or $75 or $100 a month to pay for communication services, I think that time has come to talk about that.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for that thought. It strikes me as remarkable that because of the pandemic, we're looking to go online for our most critical issues, whether it's healthcare access or voting, right? Those are franchises that are held up like no other in this country. And yet to get to those, you've got to have the broadband so this is a big step. And I just wonder, is this pandemic enough to get people's heads in the right space about maximizing opportunity to broadband?
Look, I hope it's enough. There's no silver linings in the COVID-19 pandemic. It stinks for everybody, you know, but I do appreciate the fact that it has shown a light on how critical, how essential broadband access is for all Americans to have. And I think it's important not to engage in short-term thinking, right? Yes, there are some immediate needs. There are kids who go to my daughter's school who do not have internet access right now, and they have to go to the school and pick up a learning packet. That's dangerous. That shouldn't happen.
Right.
Or there are kids and their parents that have to go to parking lots where there are Wi-Fi equipped school buses. Again, they're not engaging in social distancing. So there are some emergency measures that need to take place right now. But I think it's important to remember, first of all, this pandemic is not going away anytime soon. This is not a 4-month or a 6-month or maybe even a year long proposition. It may go longer. And even when the pandemic is over, that doesn't necessarily mean that we go back to 2019. We're not going back to normal. I just talked to two education technologists, one in Georgia and one here in Washington, D.C. And both of them said that we're not ever going back to a situation where all 1,200 kids are in a high school at the same time. You know, you'll have staggered, you know, some kids will be home learning online, some kids will be in the school. It's going to be a hybrid situation. And I would say that's going to be the same with the future of work. You know, Google's already telling their employees, you're not coming back until 2021. But we're not going back to open cubes and everybody, you know, sharing the same kitchenette. And, you know, it's going to be different. So we really have to think, to me, now is the time that we start to test some of these ideas. But we've got to think about, you know, the voucher idea or the large subsidy idea as a long-term proposition and not as a short-term one.
You have had a remarkable career, very distinguished professor there in the nation's capital at one of the premier law schools in the country. What sort of expectations or opportunities does this present for an academic professional such as yourself? In a sense, it seems like you might get more disconnected from your students, but have more possibility to engage right there in the Capitol on a on an issue we desperately need you there for. How do you see your time being spent in the coming semesters?
Well, it's remarkable. I love all the talk about, oh, the free time we have with the COVID-19 crisis. Like, I have no free time. You know, ever since this began, I've been working every single day because, again, the press, policymakers, the public have all woken up to the fact that broadband is essential and that tens of millions of Americans don't have it. So I spend my day talking to press, talking to policymakers, Hill staff. I've been doing a lot of work on that the Hill, the bill that just came out from the Democrats, the broadband portion. It's an 1,800-page bill, so it obviously didn't work on the whole thing, but giving advice to Hill staffers about what they can do. So I'm just doing a lot of public advocacy and a lot of advising. Also, I'm advising philanthropies on how they might, you know, spend money at this time when broadband access is so essential to low-income Americans. So I'm filling my time. What I'm hoping is that we'll get away from the bipartisan nature of some of the partisan nature, excuse me. We'll get away from the partisan nature of some of the issues I work on. These issues should not be partisan, because whether you're a red state Republican senator or a blue state representative from New York City, you have substantial numbers of constituents who are not connected, again, either for reasons that they can't get access to a network, period, or they can't afford it. And by the way, there's a lot of rural poor, too. Let's not forget about that.
Right.
So I hope we can get away from the partisan nature where it's kind of, you know, the Republicans are with the big companies and what they want to do, and the Democrats are sort of more consumer-oriented. I want to get to a place where everybody agrees that we've got to do something to close the digital divide. And yes, it's going to take significant government investment, because there are some places that free enterprise doesn't want to go to. And I'm okay with that,
right,
so long as, number one, there's adequate competition. And this is really important. 19 states, I do not believe Maryland is one of them, prohibit communities from building their own broadband networks. In fact, I know that Maryland isn't one of them, because when I was at the FCC, I went to Westminster, Maryland, which is about 75 miles west of Baltimore. And they had just opened up for 10,000 people in Westminster a gigabit network that was built by the community. Okay, run by private enterprise, but built by the community. And they were just, you know, it brought all these economic opportunities to this little corn town. I mean, you drive there and it's all like cornfields, right? Cornfields and soybean fields and what have you. It's extremely rural. You wouldn't even believe that it's in Maryland. But they built their own gigabit network. Well, 19 states can't do that because Comcast and Charter and others went to state legislatures and said, oh, we can't have taxpayer dollars competing with our free enterprise. So what you have is you have areas like Westminster that are completely unserved. I remember, and I don't want to belabor this, but when I went to speak at Westminster, a couple of the city councilmen came up to me and they said, Gigi, we're Republicans. But we begged Comcast, we begged Verizon, we begged AT&T to build a network in our town, and they wouldn't do it, so we had to build our own. So this gets back to the point I was making before. Getting broadband to everybody and having competition, which lowers prices and improves services, is not something that should be partisan.
Gigi, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about you, and what can they do to help you?
So I've got a website, ggsohn.com. You can find me at Twitter at ggbsohn. And I also have a podcast, which is brand new. I've just started the last couple months. It's called GNT, GG and Tech, Tech on the Rocks, on Apple, Spotify, and Google. So I'm not very hard to find. Just Google me, you'll find me. And if you're interested in these issues, you know, let me know. There's plenty of ways to get involved.
Gigi Sohn, thank you so much for joining us on Center Maryland.
My pleasure.